episode 528 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a new Comics Wednesday episode for October 3rd, 2018. And it's pretty late. And I'm all packed up and ready to go to New York Comic Con. Still a couple things to do. But for the most part, I'm anxious to get in the air and experience New York Comic Con for the first time. So I'm going to be bringing you a lot of interviews, possibly more than I've ever done at a show. New York is a very comic-centric show, so I'm going to try to maximize that and get as much content as I can for you. All that being said, this new Comic Wednesday episode is going to be a little shorter than usual. A lot of good books coming out today, but I just haven't had time to read a lot. I did take a look at about five of them that I'm going to talk about, but again, it's not going to be super in-depth here. And of course, I will give a rundown on all the other books that are coming out today that you might want to keep an eye on. So let's start with Aftershock Book. It's A Walk Through Hell number 5 from Garth Ennis and Goran Suzuka. This one starts to answer some questions. It starts to give us some answers as to just what the FBI agents that are at the center of the story have done that has them feel guilty and feel like what's going on in the story might be karma in a way. So it's the last book in the first arc. I imagine there's going to be at least one more arc, that is. And with these answers that we got, it's starting to open up more of the mystery of, okay, so now we kind of understand what they did and why they're blaming themselves and just how bad and how messed up this world is that Garth Ennis has created. So now that the focus is off of that, the focus is not split between the two mysteries, right? Like, where are they and what's happening and what did they do to get there? We know what they did to get there now for the most part. So now we just need to figure out what's going on and why. So one question answered, two more big ones to go. I feel like this was a very meaty story this time around. The book, I'm not sure, I'm trying to remember how many pages it was, but it felt like I think it was a full 32 pages, but it felt like a good chunk of story. It felt like we really got something to sink our teeth into this time. There wasn't, like in the past, I think the setting has changed 3 or 4 different locations. This one seemed to mainly focus on the warehouse. So I think that overall I was very pleased with this issue. I think it does well as the final issue for an arc because, as I said, it does answer quite a bit of questions, raises a few more, and there's some pretty jacked up images too. I imagine Goran Suzuka is having a good time illustrating this one. So still recommend A Walk Through Hell. It's been a good ride so far. I can't wait to see where Ennis takes us next. All right, the next book I'm going to talk about is Green Arrow, number 45. This is a Heroes in Crisis tie-in. It's written by Julie Benson and Shauna Benson. We have art by Javier Fernandez, John Kalis on colors, and Darren Bennett on letters. And I just realized I didn't give the creative team for A Walk Through Hell. So I should do that now. I mentioned written by Garth Ennis. I mentioned the art by Goran Suzuka. But the colors are by Eve Zvorchina with letters by Rob Steen. So I want to make sure that they get credit because they're doing a bang-up job too. Okay, on to Green Arrow 45. As I mentioned, it's a Heroes in Crisis tie-in. And we haven't done our Heroes in Crisis episode, well, it's recorded, but haven't released it yet. It's coming out this Friday. So that being said, if you haven't read it, don't want it to be spoiled, you're going to want to skip ahead about 3 or 4 minutes and not listen to the Green Arrow portion of the podcast, I guess you'd say. All right, ready? Here come the spoilers. This issue is all about Roy Harper and his funeral. So I'm still not convinced that Roy is dead, but I'm feeling like it's much more likely now than I did after first reading Heroes in Crisis. I was ready to write it off as some kind of hologram, a holodeck kind of situation. But here we have an issue which is extremely powerful from the Benson sisters. There's a lot of angst going on. There's a lot of hand-wringing and a lot of bewilderment, too, because it's still a mystery of what exactly happened to Roy. So, obviously, not only is Ollie angry, he's sad, he's confused, and most of all, he's disappointed in himself. He feels like he let Roy down. He feels like he wasn't there when Roy needed him most. So, as I said, it's a very powerful issue. There's some exposition, there's some flashbacks at different moments in time when Ollie was kind of mentoring Roy, and we see the shortcomings, and Ollie's kind of pointing out where he messed up. So it's a departure from the story that the Benson sisters have been telling, but it's a worthwhile departure. But at the same time, I do wish that this issue didn't exist. As poignant as it was, as sad as it was, as good as it was, I want my theory to have been right about this wasn't really happening. I mean, keep in mind that Booster Gold is a time traveler, so there's still time to undo it. But being that they crossed it over and enjoyed Roy Harper's funeral, man, I just don't think he's going to be back anytime soon. And that's kind of what I was hoping, what my theory was all about. So as far as the art goes, you know, the art here isn't as clean as I've seen the art be in this book up to this point from Javier Fernandez. But at the same time, he's not really drawing action scenes. It's a lot of talking heads. It's a lot of superheroes in streetwear. Art's certainly not bad. It's just not as dynamic as it's been before. I will give credit to John Kalis for using somewhat of a muted color palette, though. It definitely suits the somber mood of the issue. So the last thing I'll say is how impressive it is for writers who haven't been writing comics for very long, as Julie and Shauna Benson. They certainly would fit that description. These kind of issues are the hardest ones to write oftentimes. It's hard to get the beats right and the pacing right, because there isn't a big fight to kind of build everything out around, or a big reveal, or, you know, cliffhanger ending. There's no scenery to hide behind here, and they've made it interesting, and Javier Fernandez has made it pleasing to the eye, and most of all, they've made it heartfelt. So kudos to the entire creative team. All right, up next, I'm going to talk about the big event book out this week. Now, last week, Justice League Dark number 3 was my book of the week, just because it really upped the stakes and made the Justice League Dark series feel like the kind of the center of the Justice League universe all of a sudden. So this issue, it's big. It's a big issue with a lot going down and gorgeous, gorgeous art. So let me give the creative team really quickly. It's written by James Tynan. We have Jesus Moreno on art, Romulo Fajardo Jr. on colors, and Dave Sharp on letters. Time is not wasting any time. You know, he wants his book to be scary. He wants his book to be spooky and creepy. But I don't think he's necessarily planning on going after those aspects and that tone by building mystery. Instead, we have a good idea of who the Upside Down Man is and what the threat is that he represents. we did see Wonder Woman manifest some new mystical and supernatural powers in issue 3 of Justice League Dark. And it feels like this witching hour event is going to be explaining where that power came from and how Diana is closer to the magical, mystical corner of the DC universe than she ever realized. So the stakes were raised in that Justice League Dark number 3. And right away in the Witching Hour part 1, we're getting a lot of answers and understanding about where this power came from, what the power is, what it represents. And Titan's wasting no time. The bar is being raised and the tension's being ratcheted up. And I, for one, am very curious to see how Wonder Woman comes out the other side of this newfound power that she's discovered. We also see the Justice League show up. We see some scenes in Paradise Island. We see other members of the Justice League Dark team. There's a couple really cool character moments that I don't want to spoil for you. Specifically one that reminded me a little bit of the Justice League movie. And when you read the book, you'll know what I'm talking about. Jesus Moreno art, absolutely spectacular. Colors by Romulo Fajardo Jr. Again, absolutely spectacular. I'm pretty sure that guy's going to get my colorist of the year, man. I mean, his art, her colored work in this one just blew me away. I mean, Moreno's art is fantastic as well. I think, yeah, this is just a really, really good comics. And here's the thing, right? Here's the thing for me that shows me just how good this is and how compelling and how well done. The magic corner of the DC universe is probably the area that I'm least excited by. It's just not my particular cup of tea. And so for the sheer fact that I'm so excited for this event and so excited for what James is doing on the book, that tells me everything I need to know about just how good this is. So again, gorgeous art, gorgeous colors, compelling story, and yeah, I can't wait to see what tricks Tynan has up his sleeve, because nothing is as easy as it looks. And meanwhile, as this event's going on, there's the threat hanging over the Justice League Dark that at any moment the Upside Down Man and his army, so to speak, could be back. So kudos to James for some snappy dialogue as well. And yeah, Jesus Moreno absolutely killed it on art, 100%. All right, let me go ahead and talk about the next book. It's Blackbird number 1. Highly, highly been anticipating this one. It's from writer Sam Humphries, and the art is by Jen Bartel. We've got layout by Paul Renwand, colors by Nayoung Wilson and Jen Bartel, and letters by Jody Nguyen. So this story is about a girl who has the innate ability to see magic, whereas for most people, it happens behind the scenes. And it seems like the girl can especially see magic when she's under stress. So when she's young, she predicts an earthquake and then leaves the house with her sister because the house is not safe. And then she's eventually, they're walking along the freeway and there's cars that pose a danger and bridges collapsing because of the earthquake, whatever. And they see a giant cat-like creature save the day. And the girl, Nina is her name, is like blown away by this. Like now her eyes have been opened. She always kind of felt magic. She had an idea. And now it's been exposed, but her life doesn't necessarily go the way that she would like it to go. Like a lot of us, it's realistic in that way. And so we join her years later, and she's kind of lost in a way, and she's searching for not only for magic, but I think for herself in a way. So the story that Sam Humphries is telling is very, it seems very personal. It seems very intimate. And for that reason, the art of Jen Bartel is absolutely perfect to tell this story, because her art tends to be very emotional, very soft, a lot of soft curves, soft lines, beautiful, lush colors. It feels a little cartoony in a way. And, you know, it's not the best art. She has room for improvement in kind of the flow and composition of her panels. They do seem a little static. I'm not getting a lot of sense of movement, but it's a very, very minor quibble. I think for the most part, her art is outstanding. I wouldn't mind seeing a little more backgrounds, but it's gorgeous, and the color work is especially good as well. So I think that's probably why she gets credited as the colorist, because she's probably directing the colorist on just how she wants things to look. So I've been looking forward to this book for a while, and it didn't let me down. It's pretty much an all-girl cast in the story as well, and that didn't bother me at all. I didn't even notice, actually, until I'm flipping through here. So I think that Nina is relatable. I think that Sam Humphries is going to craft a story that is impactful and is something you can look back on and say, yeah, I really made a statement about a particular moment in time with that book. And even without a single word, Jen Bartel's art would tell an amazing story. It's really spectacular. So I definitely recommend Blackbird. It should stand out on the stands to you, because whether or not you get the Jen Bartel cover or the variant cover by Fiona Staples, I mean, either way, you can't go wrong. They're both gorgeous looking. So, all right, on to the last book I'm going to talk about in detail. It's Thief of Thieves, number 41. Recently got caught up on Thief of Thieves, and it's now being written by Brett Lewis. We still have the same great, amazing art from Sean Martinborough. We've got colors by Adriana Lucas and letters by Russ Wooten. I talked before, when we got caught up on Thief of Thieves, how different it feels with this new writer, Brett Lewis, taking over. It's a little more chaotic. It's a little more fly by the seat of your pants. It's a little more reaction rather than action. And these seem like very, very bad ideas if you want to be a good thief, right? You need a good plan. You need the meticulous planning that Redmond is known for. But he doesn't feel like he has that time anymore. He's become a little more political, caring a little bit less about the dollar and a little more about his legacy. So he does want to get revenge on the Zuboff brothers, who have damaged him, so to speak. But there's time and a place to do it the right way. And that's what Brett Lewis has done a really good job at. If there's anything wrong with this kind of collaboration or this kind of storytelling in as it relates to what came before Brett Lewis, that's where it starts to fall apart a little, because Redmond is acting so out of character. It just doesn't, I don't know. It doesn't quite feel the same, but there was an in-story explanation, and there's part of me that's like, yeah, but I mean, I want it to be good. But if you give me outs, then I very well may take it, right? Like if you give me a reason to jump off, you know, I may take it. So I'm not quite sure how it's going to read from beginning to end. This last arc by Brett Lewis may feel a little disconnected. And if I remember right, when it took a long time to get Redmond out of that prison. And so, you know, you can think of it as, well, a lot of time passed and he did suffer quite a bit in that prison. So it would affect his personality somewhat. So I'm not sure. I don't know. I was really digging Thief of Thieves and up until this issue, and it's still good. But this is the one that made me think that, or made me realize that, yeah, Conrad Paulson is changing. And I guess in a way you need him to, right? Because a character without growth stops being an interesting character. I guess maybe I wasn't done learning about who Patrick was as a man, as a thief, as a father, what have you. So don't even know how many issues are left of this series, but I'm certainly enjoying it, and I can't wait to see where it goes next. I'm going to be a fan of it till the end, and it's going to be interesting to see when it does end to look back on the kind of the growth arc, so to speak, of Conrad Paulson. That'll be interesting, especially as it pertains to these last few issues. So. All right, let me give a rundown on some of the other books that are out today that you might want to keep an eye on. Starting with Aftershock, in addition to A Walk Through Hell 5, we've got the Rough Riders Volume 3 trade paperback and a book I highly, highly, highly recommend. It's Lollipop Kids number 1, written by Adam Glass, from a story by Adam and Aiden Glass, his 14-year-old son. And I hope you all listened to Aftershock Monday this past Monday, where I played the interview with Adam and Aiden that I did a couple weeks ago. And it's just a whole lot of fun. That book is really, really great. I highly recommend it. All right, moving down the list here. Next thing I want to mention is from Dark Horse, the first Umbrella Academy Hotel Oblivion issue is out tomorrow. So all you Gerard Way fans are going to want to pick that up. Over at DC, the latest issue of Tom King's Batman is out, Batman number 56. We've also got the 51st issue of Harley Quinn from Sam Humphries, as well as Justice League number 9 from Scott Snyder and Jorge Jimenez. Justice League 9 is a really fun read. Get to see kind of behind the scenes in the Hall of Justice, where all the heroes have what they call their domains, their little areas where they can decorate as they see fit. It's like a little home away from home, so to speak. I already mentioned that Justice League number 9 is coming out today. We've got Nightwing 50 coming out today. And, of course, the Wonder Woman and Justice League Dark Witching Hour event that I just talked about has its first issue coming out today. Over at IDW, we've got Batman The Max Arkham Dreams number 1 from artist Sam Keith. So all you Batman and Max fans, it's the team up you've long been waiting for, and your wait is finally over. It's here. All right, at Image, in addition to Blackbird number 1, we've got Dead Rabbit number 1 from Jerry Dugan. Can't wait to read that. It's supposed to be really, really good. We've also got Eclipse number 11 from Zach Kaplan, as well as the Thief of Thieves title that I mentioned. Over at Marvel, we've got Champions number 25. We've got Cosmic Ghost Rider number 4, the penultimate issue by Donny Cates. We've got Doctor Strange number 6 from Wade and Jesus Saez. That's been an incredible book, so I'm very, very curious to see what the reaction is to issue 6 from all you Doctor Strange fans out there. We've also got the first issue of Shatterstar hitting stands tomorrow, as well as Tony Stark Iron Man number 4 and a Spider Event Typhoid Fever. There's a special Typhoid Fever Spider-Man number 1, so look for that tomorrow as well. All right, let's see, what else do we have here? Nothing from Valiant this week. So I think that's going to do it for the rundown. Once again, I want to thank everybody for joining. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everybody for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.